This is letting go and letting be, understanding the nature of stress. This is the first of four presentations that we'll be giving at this time. And today what I wanted to do is give you a little bit of an idea of some of the background about stress, some of the things that contribute to stress, some of the ways in which the body reacts to stress, the mind reacts to stress. So I have some slides that I want to show you and talk with you a little bit about. And then I also have a little bit of an activity for us today to maybe identify some of your own stress levels and see if in the ensuing sessions we can be of any help in maybe showing you some ways in which stress can be managed more effectively, some ways in which we can cope with stress. Let's begin with some of the slides. Yeah, some of you with the bigger heads will have to move aside. Stress is, of course, all around us and in everybody's life. There isn't any way that we can avoid it. There isn't any way that we can not experience it at times. But it's interesting that different people respond in different ways to stress. We all have a different personality. We all have a different style. We all have a different response to stress. For some of us, stress can make us quite angry. Make us kind of threatening to other people. We get kind of upset. We get irritable. We get difficult to deal with. Other of us are more confused and surprised and perhaps even disoriented by stress, causing a real problem in terms of what to do and how to handle our life situation. Others of us respond in a much more passive way to stressful situations, just kind of avoiding them, withdrawing from them, kind of just sacking out and getting out of the picture, bailing out, so to speak. There are some warning signs of stress, some of the things that you might be alert to. I'd like to go through them with you just briefly as they're listed up here. One, a general irritability associated with unusual aggressiveness or a kind of passive indolence. We saw some examples of those in the previous slides. Some physiological signs, very characteristic, pounding of the heart, shortness of breath, usually an indicator of high blood pressure. And this is often due to stress, although, of course, there can be other factors involved here, too. Accident proneness. Under great stress, both children and adults tend to show a pattern of getting into more accidents, hurting themselves, being careless in their play or at work or while driving a car. Many of the accidents we see on the highway, of course, all of you know, are due both not only to careless driving and driving under the influence of a variety of different substances, but also many people tend to jump in their car and get away when they're in trouble, when they're hurting, when they're experiencing stress in their life. And of course, that is not always the best thing to do because the attention and the focusing are not there. What we call free-floating anxiety is often present and a warning sign of stress. Afraid of things, but really not knowing exactly what we're afraid of. Trembling, nervous tics, tendency to be easily startled, stuttering, some speech difficulties are frequently stress-induced. Grinding of the teeth at night, often a sign of built-up stress during the day. Some additional signs, insomnia, usually a consequence of being keyed up. Most people who have insomnia are either like me, they drink too much coffee after dinner, or They might be keyed up, tensed up, thinking about lots of things. You're ever laid awake at night with a thousand thoughts circulating around in your head, just going round and round and round, and no solution. That's a pattern that's often contributory to sleep disturbance. Frequent need to urinate in children, bedwetting during sleep is sometimes related to stress factors. Indigestion, headaches, premenstrual tension or missed menstrual cycles, both of are frequent indicators of severe stress in women. Again, can be related to other factors as well. Stress doesn't cause, and we'll get into this a little bit, doesn't cause all these things, but stress can be a factor in many of the physiological kinds of difficulties we experience in the body. Pain in the neck or lower back, and those expressions, it turns my stomach, or he gives me a pain in the neck, or oh, my aching back, point to physical responses to feelings of stress. Some of you have had pain in the neck and the back and the legs while you're here in Holden. That's a different kind of stress associated with walking on an angle. Loss of appetite or excessive appetite, often stress-related. Interesting, you'll see many times that in stress situations, it's either an excess of something or a deficiency or a decrease in something, an excessive increase or an excessive decrease that suggests a stress-related situation. Increased alcohol and drug use, nightmares, of course, often associated with stressful situations during the day. A definition of stress, Hans Selye, an endocrinologist, is often quoted with this definition. Selye is really, I called him once in a talk like this, the father of stress. I don't know if he wants to be called the father of stress, but he is a guy who has done a great deal of research in the stress area and now heads up a center in Canada that is, I forget the name of it, but that is coordinating a tremendous amount of research in the area of stress and stress management. And his definition of stress is that stress is the non-specific response, and response should be underlined here, of the body to any demand made of it, so that he sees stress as a response to situations. He sees stressors as the things that impinge on us and create the stress. So that stress then is the body's response to a stressor. And a stressor can be just about anything that creates stress for us. It can be an environmental change. It can be a physiological problem. It can be an emotional difficulty. It can be, and as we'll talk about this in a moment too, it can be both a positive or a negative situation. We'll find in a moment that stress can result not just from anxieties and difficulties and problems, but also from very significant so-called happy events in our life as well. Stress and our response to stress has a great deal to do with several factors. First of all, prior learning and past experiences. The way we perceive situations has a tremendous amount to do with how we experience them. So that you see the two middle boxes here, stress appraisal and stress perception in any individual, along with prior learning and past experiences, dictate the individual's response, whether it be a stress response or not. Selye talked about two kinds of stress. He talked about positive stress, and the term he gave to positive stress was eustress. He also talked about negative stress, and that, of course, is distress. Selye once called stress both the spice of life, when it's eustress, and the kiss of death, when it's distress. Eustress is the kind of stress that's associated with doing something new and feeling good about it. For example, making it up to Heart Lake for somebody who's never been that far is a kind of situation that might create eustress or positive stress. There's stress involved because it's a new and a challenging experience, but it's also a very positive, motivating kind of experience in that there's a sense of accomplishment and a sense of a positive resolve about the outcome. Distress, on the other hand, is usually associated with more negative kinds of experiences in the environment, and these result in the alarm reaction or the fight or flight reaction. We'll talk about that in just a second. Some people have asked, well, how did Selye get into the brain to find out about positive stress, eustress, and distress? Now, I don't know whether this is a picture of Salieri or not, but this is, speaks for itself, I guess. The psychology of stress is important to look at, or the psychophysiology of stress is important to look at, and I have a couple of charts that I want you to just pay close attention to. It's a little bit, may look a little technical here, but it really does talk about the way the body responds to stress. If you notice that line running through the middle of the slide, horizontally through the middle of the slide, labeled normal resistance. If you imagine the body's ability to cope along that line or that continuum, you see we're relating here to stage one or exposure to stress. The stressful event is encountered, and the individual's response initially in that black checked line is to drop below normal resistance. Our first response when we encounter a stressful situation is to, in a sense, decompensate very briefly, disorganize very briefly, and then, but very quickly, the body recovers, and you can see it rises above the line of normal resistance as it begins to cope, fight back, in a sense, against the stressful situation. That first stage, the alarm stage, is characterized by several important physiological changes. First of all, hormones are pumped into the body, of which we're not aware, including adrenaline. And these create certain kinds of physiological changes for all of us, automatically. These changes include sympathetic nervous system outflow, a kind of general alertness in the body, a sensitivity. The pupils get bigger, hearing acuity increases, lots of changes that are related to, again, this fight or flight response. Peripheral vasoconstriction occurs. That is, the blood goes to the center of the body, to the trunk and to the head, and out of the extremities. As a result, under stress, we often feel our hands are cold or our feet are cold and sweaty. Shallow breathing, a kind of panting response associated with anxiety. Skeletal muscle tension. The body tenses in response to stress, and the muscles tense, especially around the shoulders, the neck, the head, and the face. Clenching of the teeth, relaxation of stomach, intestines, and sphincters, a need to urinate or defecate often is associated with stress. Many of you perhaps have the experience where you're about to have to do something, you're about to have to give a talk, or you're about to have to take an exam, you're about to have to go in and talk with the boss about a raise or about something else, and the need is to go to the bathroom to void the body. That is a typical stress response. It's true of all of us. It's associated with this fight or flight mechanism. It goes back in our history to times when man had to, when he encountered a stressful situation, had to be able to stand and fight and get ready to fight, or had to leave the situation, had to leave the scene. One of the ways that the body prepares for fight or flight is to void the wastes. Okay, very common, very typical kind of experience. Stage two here is called the stage of resistance. And you can see the body, in a sense, is above normal resistance. The body is really working on managing stress at this point. This is very adaptive, of course. It helps us to manage the stressful situation. The problem comes in stage three. Stage three occurs when stage two is either too long, that is, we're exposed to the stressful situation to such a great, or for such a great period of time, that we begin to wear down, the body begins to wear down, or if a number of other stressful situations occur, so the body is unable to cope. So then we have stage three, which we call loss of adaptability, and you can see the body's response, the individual's response, drops below normal resistance. It's at this stage that the body begins to malfunction. And of course, chronic stress then, when we're constantly exposed to stressful situations in our life, it can be very difficult for us to manage and can create all kinds of difficulties. This is just another way of looking at that same slide. I don't even know if this is necessary, but just a different schematic way of looking at it. You can see the environmental stressor, the immediate dip in the alarm reaction, the body's resistance above normal, and then either exhaustion or return to equilibrium. This is just kind of a way of looking at how we cope with, translating that physiological information that I just gave you into some of the things we do when we're confronted with stress. For example, this fight or flight response You might look at it in the way that we have it up here on the slide. And if you see on the left hand, normal, on the right hand, illness, and imagine that line as a continuum, we see that under the fight characteristics, when we're confronted with stress, one of the ways we fight back is we go to work. Okay? Now that's normal. We go to work on the problem. We go to work in the situation. We try to do something about it. The problem comes when we go into, well, we're getting down the continuum here, to excessive work. Excessive work results in all kinds of things, like arguments. We sometimes call those memos deflected onto wife or adolescent child, or anybody else for that matter. It's like the person who comes home from work after having taken it all day and then has to deflect some of that anger, some of that frustration onto somebody else. Excessive complaints, constantly fighting, and then at the far end of the extreme, causing accidents and actual physical attack. It's rare, of course, that any of you here would be involved in that kind of process, but there are situations where people are so stressed and so chronically frustrated that this translates into physical aggressiveness with family, with other people, with coworkers, in a variety of different situations. The same would be true, of course. That's the fight response. That's the adaptive moving in and let me see what I can do with this kind of stress response. The bottom section reflects the flight, the movement away from stress. To a degree, sleep is a flight response. Sleep can be a very adaptive flight response. Sometimes helpful just go to bed. One of the things that my kids typically do, and they've done as they've grown up, is that when they're hurt, they'll often come into the house or come in and get some help with a cut, or especially if it's a little bit more serious, and they'll lay down immediately and go to sleep. I don't know whether you see that with your kids. After they've been treated, they'll lay down and go to sleep for a while. That just seems to be their way of managing that very upsetting situation that they've experienced. On the other hand, that can get excessive too. All weekend at the TV, for example, on the part of a man who comes home and sleeps a lot, would result in excessive complaints about sleeping all weekend. Further along this negative continuum, a hopeless fatalistic approach might develop withdrawal. Pretty soon work is avoided. Pretty soon we start missing days at work. Other interests are dropped. Pretty soon one just quits trying, gives up. The far end of the continuum, the most negative side, of course, would be experiencing accidents and actual physical immobilization, having to go, not being able to go to work, not being able to do much, not being able to do anything, sometimes even having to go to the hospital, becoming physically ill. There are a whole group of disorders called stress-related disorders that really result from ineffective coping with daily stress, and that's really what we've been talking about in that previous slide. It's been estimated that 50 to 70% of the physical complaints that one takes to their general practitioner or the family physician are in fact stress-related or psychologically based. And by that is meant not that a person is faking, not that a person is pretending, but rather that many of the kinds of concerns that we have, many of the minor and some of the major problems that we experience in our lives physiologically have a very significant stress factor. Stress-related diseases depend on two things. One, they depend on the person's disposition, and two, the kind of stress the individual suffers. So that our genetic makeup has a great deal to do with the kind of illness we might experience in a stress-related situation. Why is it that some of us under chronic stress might develop coronary artery disease or myocardial infarction as opposed to ulcers or as opposed to migraine headaches or as opposed to other kinds of things that may well be stress-related? Well, it probably has a lot to do with this weak link theory, the fact that all of us are genetically coded with strengths and weaknesses. And what happens then is stress operates in the environment, and the way in which we handle stress, if it isn't effective or if the stress is chronic, can break the body down and break the individual down in his weak link area. A number of the physiological disorders that have been related to stress are headaches, backaches and neck pain, asthma, tics, chronic fatigue. This is a slide that shows the proportion of American adults with definite hypertension. And this happens to be by sex and race. And as you can see, black Americans have a tremendous problem in this area. It's been estimated that 25 million people in the United States have hypertension. Most of those people, or a great majority of those people, do not know that. And hypertension, not in all cases, but in many cases, is probably related to the chronic arousal of the body, the chronic fight or flight reaction situation that is characterized or that is caused by stress in our environment. Some of the psychological disorders associated with stress are anxiety, phobias or irrational fears, anger, hyperkinesis, which is a kind of hyperactivity, sexual dysfunction. These are typically related to stress rather than physiological disorder or physiological difficulty. One of the ways that that psychologists and researchers have tried to do something about stress is develop some way of measuring stress. How can we predict, or how can we point to the kinds of ways in which stress affects people's lives? One of the attempts that was made at measuring stress was some research done by a couple of fellows in the Navy called by the name of Holmes and Ray. And these two individuals developed a scale called the Life Event Scale. This Life Event Scale lists a number of different events that can occur in anybody's life, and then through a normative process assigned a value, a numerical value, to these changes or these experiences in a person's life. They include things like death of a spouse, divorce, marital separation, marriage, interesting that marriage is there, death of a close family member, detention in jail, major personal injury, illness, fired from work. There are a number of others of these, but they're both positive and negative. A child graduating from college, for example, is, I believe, one on this scale. A number of events, positive and negative, that can occur in a family that are given a numerical loading, and that measure, that seek to measure the amount of change in a person's life. Well, Holmes and Ray found in their studies with this scale that high scorers on the life event scale were correlated with, not necessarily causality here, but correlated with things like myocardial infarction, heart attack, coronary heart disease, fractures, leukemia, colds, depressive illness, schizophrenia, even some very serious and severe kinds of disorders and difficulties that people experience both physiologically and psychologically appear to be stress-related. What they found is that individuals who scored high on the scale tended to have a higher likelihood of experiencing physiological problems. How is this possible? How is it possible that life changes can cause those kinds of serious problems in a person's life? Well, one of the assumptions or theories or hypotheses these days is that somehow chronic stress has an effect on the body's immune system. We know that the body has an immune system that prevents illness under most conditions. We're continually exposed to bacteria, to problems, to infection in our life. In the foods we eat, in the people we come in contact with. Most of us don't get ill, however, not seriously, or a great majority of us don't. What seems to operate, though, in the stress situation is that stress can lower the body's resistance to disease. So stress doesn't cause disease, but stress puts us in a situation where we don't have the same, that we don't have the kind of coping skills, the body doesn't have the kind of resistance that it needs to get away from that kind of situation. Even some of the cancers today, some of the research that's being done with cancer is being done in the area of how and in what ways stress may be related to the development of cancer. Again, probably through destruction of the immune system. This is an interesting slide, and it tells some research that Holmes and Ray did with this scale. They took a group of 3,000 men who were going aboard ship to be on a 9-month, I believe it was, trip at sea. They took I believe it was two different boats. I'm forgetting now some of the details of this study, but what they did was they measured all these men before they came on board, or just as they came on board, on the life event scale. Had each of these men, 3,000 sailors, and they normed them for age and lots of other factors, and found the scores on the life event scale. Then they kept track of these men as they reported to sick bay, as they developed illnesses, etc., while aboard ship. They had a captive audience. Not only did they have a captive audience, but they had a group of men who they could check. Every time they were sick of any significance, these men reported to sick bay. At the end of the study, they found some very significant statistics. They found that the high life event scale, LES scores, the highest 30%, those men who have scored in the highest 30% on this scale showed 90% more illness than the low life event scales scores, the lowest 30%. Okay? So the highest 30% of these 3,000 men on the life event scale prior to getting aboard ship showed 90% more illness than the lowest 30%. Again, suggesting that life change in the previous year or prior to, and it's usually in the previous year or two, can contribute to the development of physical and psychological difficulties. Another piece of research that was done found that heart attacks were associated with accumulated stress. These were heart attacks in men in their mid-30s. You can see that the line suggests that the levels of life changes, and these are in terms of the life event scale, as the levels of life changes went up, as these men scored higher on the life event scale, they were more likely to be the heart attack population. Interestingly enough, in this study also, those who scored the very highest were separated out from those who didn't score, who scored high but not the very highest. Those who scored the very highest tended to die from the heart attack, whereas those who did not score as high had the heart attack but did not die. I don't know why this slide is in here. I thought it was interesting to picture this man with these little pencils growing out of him. I don't know why he would be doing that, but actually this is a shot that I've used to talk about the fact that stress can really show and can really create some problems that might make us bristle, might make us angry. Let me just summarize briefly now, then, and I want to go on to the next part of what we want to do today. Stress is constant. The intensity and frequency of stress are variables. We can't get away from stress. It's around us. It's all around us. You can't live and not be under stress. But the intensity, the frequency of the stress, and as we'll see in a minute, the way in which we deal with stress has a lot to do with how much it affects us. Stress can be helpful and or harmful. It's certainly motivating to be under stress. Certainly helped me to get ready for this presentation, to have a little bit of stress. I've been sitting reviewing these notes for an hour and a half. If I didn't have any stress about it, I probably would have never got here in the first place. You know, stress gets us going. Stress gets us moving. Stress gets us making decisions. But it can be harmful, too. In too big a dose, in too chronic a framework, it can be quite debilitating. 3, since stress is inevitable, we have to learn how to cope more effectively with stress. We have to learn how to deal with stress. And that's really what we're going to try to do in the next couple of sessions here also.